It is 3 o'clock in time for our Legendary Artist Series on the Class Reunion, and we welcome one of the true legends of rock and roll, and that being Gretchen Christopher from the Fleetwoods. Hello there.
Hi there, Kelly.
We had a chat earlier on today just to get to know each other a little bit before we got on the air, and we wound up laughing and carrying on, so goodness only knows what's going to happen during the next hour.
Well, I'm going to try to be serious.
Oh, sure. don't serious up on me now.
I'll leave the comedy to you.
No, I think you better do it, because I've heard my comedy, and I know how bad mine is. Anyway, it is great to have you on here, because so many people around the station here, and especially Joanne in our front office, loves your music and always has. Me too, because it brought back a lot of great memories of record hops and slow dancing and, just some really great kickback and listen to music.
Yeah, well, great. Tell Joanne to tune into my website and listen to the sound clips of my new CD.
Alrighty, let's go into the heart and soul of Gretchen Christopher.
All right.
I just noticed a wave of panic sweep over the phone.
The heart and soul of Gretchen Christopher.
Yeah, the heart and soul of Gretchen Christopher, the songwriter, the entertainer, everything else. And you were one of these people that I gather from reading your bio that you always wanted to be a songwriter.
No.
Oh, sure make the disc jockey wrong.
It just kind of happened, really, Kelly. I did write a little song when I was 5 years old. When the birdies go down the street, they go tweet, 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 or something like that, you know. And my dad actually wrote it down in a spiral music book, and I still have it somewhere. But other than that, my first published song was Come Softly to Me, and I was not composing it to be a hit. It just kind of came out of me as a reaction to an audition that Barbara and I were holding to find a couple of other girls to sing with us. And that worked out poorly, because we were auditioning them on In the Still of the Night at the Five Satins. And they kept singing louder and louder, these girls. And I said, it's in the still of the night, softly, softly. It's in the still of the night. And then after it was over and none of them worked out, and I was alone at the upright piano at Olympia High School, and I just started playing the same chords that In the Still of the Night and Earth Angel and so many songs are based on night and day. And I just kind of turned it into a song, you know, Come Softly, Darling, Come Softly, Darling. And I got it pretty much written, and I bounced a few lyrics off Barbara where I'd say, you know, I have this lyric or that lyric, and which one should I go with? And actually, because I was so excited about it, I credited her with writing half the lyrics. And I would always say that on tour, that she and I both wrote the female lyrics. And she finally, after about the 100th interview, she piped up from the background and said, I did not write those lyrics. I didn't even know what the word obsession meant. So, you're my obsession forever and a day, you know. So it's true, but she was moral support, so to speak. She did harmonize with me. I had arranged the harmony on the piano. Of course, the chords dictate that to some extent, and I wrote the melody and I wrote the lyrics, and Barbara harmonized. And then, independent of that, we were walking downtown, or rather, I was, after we had auditioned a trumpet player that we thought would be good to play a trumpet part behind our arrangement of Stormy Weather, the jazz arrangement. But he couldn't play in our key and we couldn't sing in his. And so he walked me downtown after school, and we were standing on the street corner waiting for my mother, and he started singing this trumpet riff that was in his head. Dum, 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 do, dum, do, dum, dum. And I could hear that it was based on the same chord progression as the song I'd just written, and so I asked him to slow it down. And then I arranged Come Softly to Me against it in counterpoint, and it worked. And I said, let's do it for Barb, and if she likes it as much as I do, we'll incorporate that into the song and you into the group. And that's what we did, and we sang it at our senior class talent assembly, and the a cappella, And the kids just went wild, and they were totally silent through it. And there was a moment of silence after, and I had leaned into the microphone and said, "Come." And there was this silence, and I thought, is something wrong?
Oh,
and
no. The old silence of, oh, no.
And but then they went wild. They loved it. But Barbara said to me afterwards, "You can't say that, Gretchen." Why not? What do you mean? Anyway, that...
Slightly innocent at this stage in life, were we?
Yes, and the kids loved it so much and asked that we did one more performance of it, and kids came up to me afterwards and said, "Why don't you record that so we can buy it?" So I had already made my professional solo debut as a dancer and a singer, both solo. And because you were asking, did I always want to be a songwriter?
Right.
And I hadn't really, you know, that was not one of my goals at all. And I told the owner of the club, Norm Bobrow, the owner of the Colony, where I was having these wonderful opportunities to dance solo, and not that there were any dancers there. There was just a singer, Pat Suzuki, who was about to star in Flower Drum Song. And I was called in to replace her when she fell ill. So I told Norm Bobrow about this song and how the kids at school wanted us to record it so they could buy it. So he introduced me to Bob Reisdorf, who was a record promoter who was promoting Pat's record, and it was the biggest distributorship in the Northwest. And so he said, "Well, bring me a tape, and if I think it has promise, I will send it to different record companies and see if somebody wants to sign you. And if not, if I don't think it has that much going for it, you can pay your own postage and send it without a note of recommendation." So I took Barb and Gary home to my place and used my dad's tape recorder, and I recorded his a cappella. And then I went all alone up to Seattle, the big city, which is 60 miles away, and played it for Bob Reisdorf. I mean, gave it to him to play, and he played it with another disc jockey present. I say another disc jockey. He was not a disc jockey, but with a disc jockey present, and they turned to each other, and Bob said, "It'll sell a million." And
he was right, too.
Yeah, and so he never sent it to anybody. He started his own company, and it did indeed sell a million. It became the first gold record produced by a Northwest artist on a Northwest label.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Now, Bing Crosby is a Northwest artist, but he was not on a Northwest label. You know, he was on whatever was the Capitol, or who knows.
You're going to force me to look that up, you know.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. A lot of people have been doing research for me, because I was interviewed by Ask Mr. Music, Jerry Osborne, and he said some things that I didn't realize, and I had said we were the first group in the world actually, somebody told me this, a publisher said, "Do you realize that you're the only artist to have two number one hits in 1959? And she sent me the chart that proved that. But then later on another chart, I saw that Frankie Avalon squeaked in with one more number one record. You know, Come Softly to Me knocked, as he told us when we did our first Dick Clark show, Frankie said, "Well, congratulations, Come Softly to Me just knocked Venus out of the number one spot." Yeah. Well, it turns out that he had another number one hit just the last couple of days of December. And so then it wouldn't be accurate to say that the Fleetwoods were the only artists in the world to have two number one hits in 1959, but the only group in the world to have two number one hits in 1959 on the Billboard Hot 100, which, of course, was
the standard in 1959. Yes. Some radio stations use Cashbox, and actually Cashbox was a little more generous than that.
Is that right?
Yeah, because that was based not only on airplay, but it was also based on jukebox play.
You know, and that's what I'm trying to figure out, and I'm actually composing a letter to the person who wrote the book that you use as a Bible.
Joel Whitburn,
and Fred. Fred.
Yes, Fred. Good old Fred.
Yeah, Fred, who wrote the Billboard Book of Number One Records, Fred Bronson.
Right.
And when I was...
I'm glad you thought of it, because the name was going right by me.
I know. And he brought me his books. Well, he did an interview with me one time for Dick Clark, Rock, Roll, and Remember, I think it was. And he gave me one of his books then, Billboard Book of Number One Hits. And then when I was playing the Cine Grill in Hollywood with my solo act, he came to the show and he brought me two more copies. So I have three copies, and they are my resource. So I think he and Joel Whitburn are the two real biggies. And apparently they, I guess they both used the same resources, and I'm, anyway, composing a letter to each of them to find out, you know, just what charts they did use, because it appears, after he gave me these books, I looked back, and yes, not only were we the only group to have two number one records in 1959, but as I went back to the beginning of Charted Rock and Roll, which is 1955, no other group appeared to have had two number one hits in a year, and going forward, no one did until 1961 or two. It was...
I would guess the Four Seasons.
That's right, yeah.
Pretty and good, of course, huh?
Yeah, very good. And of course, the wonderful thing, you and I were talking about this earlier, the wonderful thing about being the first is that nobody can ever take that away from you. You're always the first, even though the Four Seasons did it later, you know.
Sure.
It was kind of special to be the first. And of course, we were not exceeded until 1964, when the Supremes had three number one hits and the Beatles had six. So, pretty neat company to be ousted by.
Yeah, it's not real shabby. One of my artists was telling me one time, I think it was the Vogues, were telling me we were solid number two. We couldn't break into number one because of another artist that was just, you know, we just wouldn't get out of the number one slot.
Uh-huh.
You know, we were selling as many records. By the way, jumping back to a couple of things, so we'll clarify things as we go along here. Bing Crosby was on Decca and Capitol.
There you go. Well, I did say Capitol, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Very good. He had most of his hits on Decca, however.
Okay, and Capitol now owns iMasters, EMI Capitol.
Oh, okay, that's cool. We're talking about Barbara Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about Gary, we're talking about Gary Troxell.
Right, yes. We are the three original Fleetwoods. And Gary was born first. He was born in 1939. But Barbara and I were born in the same hospital. Our mothers were probably in there at the same time, because in those days they used to keep people...
Sure, forever.
You know, quite a long time, yeah. Barbara was the next born. She was born February 20th. And then I was born February 29th. And so they both got pretty old, you know. Gary is 67 and Barbara's 66, but I'm only 16.
Sweet 16, which of course just happens to just happens to be the title of your new CD, by the way.
Right. Exactly.
That was pretty sneaky us getting to that, wasn't it?
You led us there.
Yeah, I certainly did, didn't I? But I wanted to mention that one thing you want to do is you want to check out the Fleetwoods website. It's www.fleetwoods.com, is that it?
Yeah, www.thefleetwoods.com.
Fleetwoods. And
you can actually even get there by going www.fleetwoods.com. Just so it's .com. Either way, it'll get there.
Just so you get there. And there's all kinds of neat things on there. As a matter of fact, as I'm talking to you, I have my laptop right alongside of me, and I'm just accessing the site so I can sound like I know what I'm talking about most of the time. But it's a great site because you can preview some cuts from the new CD, and there's a vintage picture on page one of Gretchen, Gary, and Barbara,
mm-hmm.
complete in white cocktail dresses of the era.
Yes, oh, I love those dresses. They were so elegant.
They were, weren't they?
They were. They were sheath dresses, you know, fitted, form-fitting, of wool, sort of off-white wool with a little white satin trim just under the bust line, and I think little seed pearls or something up above. It was funny because we were inducted into the Olympia High School Alumni Hall of Fame last year, a year ago May, and so they wanted a picture, and so I gave them that picture of the three of us, and they blew it up and were kind of fixing some of the, I guess what they did is they scanned the album cover, mm-hmm. but it had some damage to it, you know how it does, they get little flecks off it and stuff. Well, anyway, the person doing the scanning said, "Well, there were all these little dots on your dress, so I cleaned them off." Well, he cleaned off all the pearls. But it was okay.
Now, this may be a first for the class reunion. I think this is the first time we've ever had a fashion discussion with one of our artists.
Oh. Well, you know what? When we quit performing together, Barbara wrote to me and she said, "You know, the thing I really miss most about not performing is I'll go to a store and I'll see some gowns and I'll think, oh, those would be great for Gretchen and me for a show. And then she'll remember she doesn't have any shows coming up.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, we've talked a lot about Come Softly to Me. Let's do it. Now, if memory serves me correctly, the rhythm in here, and I may be wrong, but the rhythm in here, isn't that Gary shaking his keys?
That's right, car keys. Yeah, we recorded at a cappella in Seattle. You know, I took an a cappella recording up, and then Bob started his company, and Bonnie Guitar was involved, and Lou Laventhal. And anyway, in the studio, yeah, we just... Gary shook car keys as our rhythm. We recorded it a cappella, and then Bob and Bonnie Guitar flew the masters down to Hollywood to have just a bass and guitar overdubbed. I think there's both rhythm guitar and the solo single string guitar. But that's it. There are no drums except for the car keys. And those are in my new recording, too.
Dum do dum do be do dum 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 do dum do be do dum 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 do dum do be do dum 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 do dum.
I forget all right offhand, Gretchen, where I picked up the fact about the car keys. It was is some obscure little notes that I had to myself. I never really had noticed it, and as soon as I picked that up, I went back and listened to the song, and I said, yeah, that's what that rhythm is.
Yes.
And
yes.
I'm sitting there shaking my own car keys along with it, saying, yeah? And I could almost probably tell how many car keys he had, but...
Oh, yeah, I just recorded the song, re-recorded it in Texas a year ago, May, just the week before that Hall of Fame induction, and so I had to rush back here for that. But, yeah, I used car keys in the Come Softly and Come Softly to Me that I recorded last May, too.
Was Gary in the service at that time?
He was in for 2 years. Not when we recorded it. He had joined the Naval Reserve while we were in high school, and it wasn't until after we hit that they started wanting him to come in and serve his time. And Bob Reisdorp was saying, please, please, you know, this group is just hitting big, and they'll never have this opportunity again, as importantly as this, you know, as this time is for their career. That was poorly stated, but you get the idea what I mean.
It worked for me.
and he kept pleading, and so Gary would be allowed to not go in at that time, but then Bob Reisdorp was getting all sorts of offers for us to be booked in Europe and to tour all over. And he couldn't book us because these were booked 5 months in advance, and Gary was always like 3 months away from going in. You know, they'd sort of stay the execution for another 3 months. And so finally Bob just said, let's just let him go in and get it over with. And so that's what he did. And I'm not positive what the years were, but I'm going to guess 60, 61, or 60 to 62, something like that. And anyway, the very early 60s. And then on leave, he'd come back down to Hollywood, and we would record. And by that time, Barbara and I lived in Hollywood, so it made it easy when we'd all congregate. We only lived there because our label, Dalton Records, it started out Dolphin and became Dalton, but when our songs hit, so everybody and their brother, it seemed, wanted to buy the Fleetwoods contract. Of course, Dalton didn't want to sell because then they'd be an empty shell, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But Liberty Records, with whom Bob Reisdorf had arranged national distribution, offered to buy the whole label, not just the Fleetwoods out